You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks and co-host Angelia Savage. We seek to help you relate well so you can live well in all aspects of your life.
Welcome to the show that will change your life for the rest of your life. This is Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks, and I'm your co-host Angelia Savage, and this is a show that's going to help you connect and communicate better with everyone around you, because when we learn to communicate better with one another, we actually stand in our power and we ultimately become better at everything. We become a better spouse, a better parent, a better employee or employer, and basically, we just become a better human being, the one that God intended us to be all along. And this is why Relate Well was created by Dr. Rick Marks himself. He has a true passion to continually help others become the best version of themselves while relating to each other. And also known as Dr. Rick, it is your birthday today.
Yes.
Happy, happy, happy birthday.
Why, thank you, my dear friend. I hit a new decade.
Uh-oh.
60.
Woo! Oh, my goodness.
60.
Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
Wonderful.
Finally joined my wife in the 60s. So.
Oh, I like it.
She's 60. She'll turn 61 in February. But so I've been, my 50s were great, Angelia.
Uh-huh.
They really were. Even with the COVID and all that, you know, my 50s were great. I'm actually looking forward to bigger things mm-hmm. in my 60s. You know, the Relate Well takes off and we're impacting more and more families through Relate Well and through the work that we do. So I'm really expecting a lot more and looking forward to much more.
What's your main goal for your 60s? Do you have main goal?
Other than die well with a strong marriage, which is always my goal in life, to have a strong, healthy family, is really to see Relate Well impact people's lives, be it single, dating, or married, so that people can start to develop the healthy, mature relationships they really want mm-hmm. and are looking for, and that we just show them how to do it.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I see in the 60s, that Relate Well takes off at the national level, and possibly international as well. We've had a person from Berlin purchase it. And is going through it, a couple in Berlin,
yeah.
which was exciting to see. And our Relate Well launch that's taking place here right now, 93% of the people who did this second launch with us had never heard of me before.
Hmm.
So of all the people that registered through fightfreemarriage.com, 93% of those never heard of me before. So the work that we're doing to get the information out there is reaching people that didn't know me.
Reaching worldwide.
Yeah.
I love that. Relate Well has gone worldwide.
Yeah, and we're really excited about the potential that it has to really impact individual lives. Like, we had a couple who separated. They're taking it. And I asked the wife, I said, how's it working? She said, well, we're separated. We're in two different states. It's okay. She said, but I'll tell you the real value. I said, what's that? She goes, I'm learning how to be a better person relationally. So if anything, I am learning what to do different and how to be different. And I said,
that's great.
I told you it wasn't a marriage curriculum, it's a relationship curriculum. That's why it's called Relate Well.
It is. It's about communication. Communication
yeah.
with everyone. Just as I talk about in the intro, it is relationships across the board.
Yes.
It will help you in every aspect of your life with your children, with your spouse, with your coworkers, with everyone around you.
Yes. And so I will tell you that my wife gave me my gift.
Already.
A trip to see Lionel Richie. So on October 1st, we got to experience Lionel Richie. And I'm
yes.
telling you, it was just as much fun as when I went and saw Celine Dion for the first time.
Oh, how exciting. So, were you dancing on the ceiling?
Oh, yeah. It's a great song, isn't it?
In Vegas for your birthday.
Oh, you know, when he sings that song, Lady,
uh-huh.
you know, of course, Kenny Rogers is the one that made it famous, but he wrote it for Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear that song, I always think of Luella.
Oh,
always
did you sing it to her?
Oh,
did you sing it to her in Vegas while Richie was doing backup?
I sang it to her yesterday. Yeah, too.
I love it.
I just love that song.
How exciting. Oh,
so,
well, I'm glad you guys had a good time in Vegas, and I want you to enjoy the rest of your birthday month.
Thank
just,
you.
Just birthday month. It's not a birthday day. It's a birthday month. So enjoy.
I've never had a birthday month.
Oh, my goodness. That's how I celebrate.
Oh, I like that. I should try that then.
I love it. That's great. Okay. Well, so.
So Colby's going to throw me a party now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We got a birthday coming. Birthday party. All right. And we'll dance on the ceiling again.
Oh, great song, isn't it?
Yes. Okay. Well, let's start the show with questions that you are completely blindsided by. You've never seen or heard these questions before.
Right.
Because these come from all of our listeners, and people write in all the time with great, great questions. So this one is from Stacy in Rye, Connecticut. And Stacy says, my husband and I were always on the same page when it came to work and finances. Neither of us were born into wealthy families, so it was always our goal to become super successful. Have a home in the country and a house, you know, beach house, etc., on and on. We have worked and accomplished our goals, so now I'm ready to enjoy what we've built together. But he wants more, more, more. We're at a breaking point in our marriage right now. I can't see a way out. I see the writing on the wall. We will divorce if we aren't on the same page. So how do we get back on the same page?
So if I'm understanding the question, they've been together on finances, budget, those kind of things. And he's got to a place where he's not abiding by that. And he's wanting to spend more and more?
No, it sounds as though they've always been on the page when it comes to work and finances.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds as though maybe because they weren't born into wealthy families,
right.
She said they wanted to become super successful.
Okay.
So they wanted to buy all the stuff and have all the stuff, it sounds like. So they've accumulated all the stuff. They've worked, they've accomplished their goals. And now she wants to sit back and enjoy all of their accomplishments. But he still wants to keep doing more, buying more, and accomplishing more, and not sitting back and enjoying all of the fruits of their labor.
Ah, sounds like, and I'm just having to speculate, that somebody didn't communicate their expectations, that I expected that you and I are get to this level, and once we get to this level of achievement, we're going to stop and rest. But apparently one person doesn't know that that was an expectation because they have been working together doing the same thing. So that's a pattern. Got it?
Okay.
So they have a pattern as an us that we buy, achieve, succeed, succeed, buy, achieve, right? That's what they've both been doing. And then she stopped doing the pattern. He's not doing anything different. He's still doing the pattern. You think about it.
He's still doing what they've always done.
Well, it wasn't a rat wheel because it's what they both agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
She'll now see that as a rat wheel because she decided to not do that anymore. But what she doesn't recognize is he's just doing what he's done. And so he doesn't know that she doesn't want to do buy, achieve anymore. He's just doing what they've always done as a couple. So they're going to have a conversation around this pattern. And what it needs to alter, because maybe where she sees the threshold is, his threshold may be a little higher. He may be thinking, you know, I want a 50-foot boat, not the 20-foot boat.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to keep achieving until he gets those goals met. So apparently they've not agreed on what the goals were that said we're going to stop this pattern.
Okay, so it's something possibly simple enough to save the marriage if they just communicate that threshold is?
Yes, and have that conversation.
So it's not too late.
No, it's never too late until the fat lady sings that old, you know, that old statement they always say, you know? And so the reality is, though, that they've got to start communicating about what is this threshold? She's met it, but apparently he's not. Mm-hmm. So if they were in my office, I'd sit down and go, well, did y'all both agree to do this? Yes, 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 yes. All right. Okay, great. He's not doing anything different than you've always done. The difference is you stopped doing it. He's continued on and you're seeing that as a problem. It isn't a problem. It's what you've always done. You all haven't had a communication about when do we stop and what that looks like in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Got it?
Okay.
Now, if they come to a level of agreement, Angelia, and we're going to stop when you get the Maserati or whatever, right? Whatever that agreement is. When we get to this level, we're going to stop. And us agrees to that. Then you should see it taper off. If one person continues to do it, though, mm-hmm. now you have a problem.
Okay.
Got it?
All right. I think that's fair
but
advice.
But it doesn't sound like there was a conversation around what that level of agreement was to say this is the threshold.
I wonder if there, remember last week we talked about that power struggle stage in
yes.
marriage. I wonder
that's
if there,
it.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It sounds yep. like they might be in that power struggle stage where I'm saying enough's enough and you're saying it's
no.
not and I'm saying it is and we're digging our heels in the sand. And
this is and it's in the power struggle stage that us gets destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
That you destroy the sense of usness.
Yeah, because she's saying, I mean, I see the writing on the wall. We're going to divorce if we're not on the same page.
And he may not be thinking, we don't have to divorce because of this. This is something we've always done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing this for you. I'm doing this for the kids.
Right. Yeah. Oh, gracious.
Because they didn't have a conversation about the expectations. When is this pattern that you both agreed to? When does it stop? What mm-hmm. is that threshold?
That's why it's so important that when you talk about every day you do a check-in with your wife. I mean, every single day. It's so important. What's going on every single day? How are you feeling? Is there anything that you want to get off your chest? Is there mm-hmm. anything that we need to talk about? What are your feelings on this? It's so important to communicate. That's why Relate Well is so important.
And we share appreciations and gratitudes every day.
Yeah, because there's things to be grateful for, evidently,
very much so.
in their world. I mean, it sounds like anyway. They've got quite a bit.
She's focusing on the negatives of him. But if you step back objectively, there's a lot of things she can appreciate as well.
Yeah, he sounds like a hard worker. I mean, there's mm-hmm. I'm sure she can go on and on. But okay, well, let's move on to the next question. And that is from Babs in Palm Beach, Florida. Babs says, when I met my husband, I was in terrific shape. I was an athlete in high school and college. And afterwards, I continued to work out and stay healthy. Recently, my body has gone through changes and due to getting older and kids and all of those things to blame. Anyway, my husband is always saying small innuendos, trying not to be mean, but because I know him so well, I know what he's getting at. So I finally asked him point blank if he has a problem with how I look, and he said yes, and that he would like to see me take care of myself and get into the gym more often. He wasn't being mean, but it still hurts. Now I look at him differently because his love for me feels conditional. Am I being too sensitive? Because I know he's right.
The piece I don't know is, though she admits that things changed and that time has gone on and there are always changes, you know, on some level, is does she feel bad about the way she looks now? If there's a part of her.
Sounds that, like it because it, she said, I know he's right.
Yeah. So it
so
feels like it, right? So it feels like it. I didn't want to assume that would say that, but I'll go with you being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll assume that she feels bad about it. Then what her struggles are is that he's pointing out the very things that she feels bad about herself. Can you see that? Because
mm-hmm.
the
yeah.
part of her that had that in a values in her life, but it didn't become it wasn't a value anymore,
mm-hmm.
and so she started to change her patterns, what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Although for him, that was a shared value for many years, it's still a value for him, just isn't for her. And so he now looks at her, and she feels bad about how she looks. And when he makes comments, it just bumps up against that self-esteem issue for her.
Okay, let me bump up against you right there. Hold that thought about values, and we're going to come back in a moment. We've got to take a quick break. You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick.
Healthy, loving relationships are essential for a happy life. On Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks and co-host Angelia Savage, you'll learn the principles for healthy, mature relationships. They share personal journeys, biblical and clinical insights that will challenge and inspire you to create fulfilling relationships in every aspect of life. Sundays at 5 p.m. on 97.1 The Truth and ilovethetruth.com. When we relate well, we will live well. And to live well, we must relate well.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick. I'm Angelia Savage, your co-host, and we just had to sign off quickly, unfortunately, to take one of those quick breaks.
Mm-hmm.
But not a bathroom break, but a quick break. And so now we're back. And I do want to touch on the question again. And that was from Babs, and we were talking about how her husband is saying small innuendos about her weight. And doesn't sound like in a negative way. It sounds like he's being kind. She says he's not being mean, but she's feeling as though his innuendos are making her feel like his love is conditional. And she's saying she knows, or she thinks that he's right, but she's wondering if she's being too sensitive and how she should deal with this.
Yeah, I would say that she can, one, it sounds like that she feels bad about it herself. So when he makes a comment, it's just pushing on some of her own shame and guilt that she feels about herself and how she feels she is physically, those kind of things. To assume that he doesn't love her because she's that way is something she needs to confirm. Unless he says, I only love you if you look this way, then she'll know for a fact. She may not feel that he loves her, but that doesn't mean he doesn't love her. Her pointing those things out may be his love for her, all right? Clearly, his value is still about physical health, those kinds of things. Hers has changed. This is where communication comes in. They can just have a talk. They listen, I know that I'm not where you want me to be. I'm not where I want to be, but this is where I'm at. And I know that you try and point things out to me to probably encourage me, but I just want you to know that they don't come across encouragement. I hear them more as discouragement. And but part of me says, do you love me as I am? Just ask the question. Okay. Rather than play it out in your head, just ask.
Yeah, I think that's fair to just go in directly and ask rather than
with goodwill and respect
running down the road with your thoughts saying he doesn't love me because I look like this, whatever her situation is. So she's already running down the road. Probably
already has an inner critical voice anyways.
We all do, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Don't we?
Yes,
and that's
we
what
do.
We're going to talk about next.
Ah, okay.
We're actually going to, so that's a great segue into that inner critical voice that we all have.
So I would tell her, just talk. But this one, Angela, I got to tell you, this one, when you first read it, I went, ooh, I felt this pause in me. I was in the U.S. Navy when I got married, ran 7 miles a day, played racquetball. I've always in great shape. I started gaining weight 2003. When I was traveling a lot. Even in those early days of marriage, Luella used to criticize what I looked like because she was heavy as a kid. And she had problems because of weight as a child. Then she went to Weight Watchers in her late teens, early 20s, and kind of got herself together. But because she had emotional issues around food, she put it off on me.
Okay.
Which is why she tried to control the eating and all that. Uh-huh. I knew where it was coming from. But the problem is, I never could measure up because she had these fears that I was going to become something. And then because she didn't want me to become something, she would criticize the way I was. So I was always in great shape. And so she'd try and control it.
Do we all do that?
And what's funny is I can look at pictures of us when we were young.
Uh-huh.
And sadly, the first thing I think is she thought I was fat back in those days. That's the first thing I think.
And you were in shape.
Yeah, I was. And I go, she thought I was fat back in those days. Uh-huh. You know? That's what I would think to myself. I thought, that's a terrible way to have to look at your pictures of the past. But
that's your old pictures.
But that's the message I always got.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yeah.
So in one sense, I'm like, I can identify this lady on a little bit, you know?
Well, that inner voice is really important.
I mean,
that inner voice that takes us back to a moment or a trauma or whatever it is. And that's what I want to talk about in this next segment. Because...
Okay.
This is so important, what we tell ourselves and how we deal with our inner voice that's constantly talking to us. I mean, we can't run from our inner voice. We have it. We have it for a reason. Sometimes it's to protect us, but other times it actually harms us.
Yeah, this inner voice here, I have a name for it. I call it it.
It.
I call it it.
Just it.
It will never deal with reality. What it does... It is this little voice. I actually have a troll doll in my office to represent it. And I'll tell people, I'll go, tell it to shut up. We all have an it. Now, the Bible would refer to the it as the flesh, all right? I just like to call it it myself. It is this part of your brain, part of our humanity. It sits right back here in the back of the head. It will never deal with life in life. What it does, it sits in the back of your head and watches what's taking place in life. And judges and criticizes it. I think of it like this. It is like the fans in the stands. The fans, they sit in the stadium, and up there in the stands, and there's life down there on the field or court. Now, the people in the stands, they think this way. That was a stupid play. What'd you make that call for, coach, right?
Yeah.
That's what they do, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And I always want to go, hey, why don't you get your tail out of the seat, suit up, go down there on the field.
tell me if you think
the same way. You don't, right?
Uh-huh.
The problem with it is it only cares about two things, and two things only, looking good and avoiding looking bad. That's all it cares about. And so if I do something that hurts you, I'm not going to look bad. So I'll blame you for what I did. It thinks this way. That's right. That's wrong. You should. You shouldn't. Why did that? Because or you did that in order to. What's in it for me? You know, that's not true. That's false. All it does is sits back and judges and criticizes everything.
That sounds like a child.
It is a very critical part of our humanity. And yet we all have it till the day we die. The problem is most people give honor to that voice. I did. I didn't know that I had that voice. It was always criticizing me. But it's a critical voice. It tears you down and it tears other people down. It'll always make you feel better about you. Well, you did that because they did this. It's their fault. It's, you know, they don't care about you. They did that because of this. That's the it voice in your head. But the problem with it is as long as you give honor to that voice, it will dictate your future.
So it sounds like it is protecting you.
It is. Not necessarily. It is always going to make sure you're right and everybody else is wrong. It is not teachable. It okay. won't admit that you made a mistake and you need to seek forgiveness. No, I said that to you, Angelia, because you did that. So I'm not sorry. That's it. That's what it would do. It's not going to own up to anything. It's this critical voice in your head that always beats you up and tears you down and tears everybody else down. And we all have it. The problem is you got to tell it to shut up.
Okay. And how do you do that? How do you tell it to shut up?
I tell it to shut up, say it out loud. And then I always tell people, take a deep breath. And I tell people, come out here in life and enjoy me. Get out of your head and come consciously outside of you and deal with people out here in life is what I call it. Mm-hmm. You see? And when you can step out and move into conscious awareness to live in the present, see, it only speaks from the past. That's all it can speak from. It lives in the past and it speaks from the past. But right here, right now, in this moment, Angela, you and I right here, let's you and I engage each other right here in the present. To do that, we can silence the it voice in our head and not give honor to it. You see? Now, it will say things like, you're not good enough. You're unlovable. See, you have no value. See, you're worthless. See, you're never going to be chosen. See, you're a failure. That's what it does all the time. It's that critical inner voice. My brother Don had a mentor in his life. And the mentor called Don when he was on a business trip many years ago. And he said, Don, I have this friend I'd like to get your help about. And so Don's like, I could tell my mentor. He's asking me a question. And so his mentor said, I got this friend. This guy puts me down all the time. All the time. And I tell you, he's been with me for a long time, years of friendship, tears me down. I told him to stop. He doesn't listen. Don, what would I do to this person? And Don goes, well, if you try to tell him to stop and he doesn't do it, he doesn't respect you, you may have to stop the relationship. He said, that's a good idea. I may have to do that. He said, Don, where are you right now? He goes, well, I'm in Kansas in a business trip. He said, where are you right now, though? He said, I'm in the hotel. He goes, go to the bathroom, look in the mirror. So Don went to the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and he goes, you in the look in the mirror? See, I go, Don, you have a friend inside your head who constantly tears you down. Why do you always listen to something that always tears you down? Just as much as you can tell yourself negative about you, you can also speak positive over you. Affirmations.
Wow.
You can always speak affirmations. That's why we tell people who do that, get a what are those little sticky notepads?
Mm-hmm.
Write down positive affirmations about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I am lovable. I am good enough. I matter. Put those on your bathroom mirror. And every day with feeling, that's the key, with feeling, say to yourself, I matter. I am good enough. I'm lovable. With feeling. And eventually your brain will start to believe those things. And the it voice will get quiet. Now, how do I know that I'm lovable, that I'm good enough? Well, the cross declares you are. You don't die for things you hate. You die for things you value. And the fact that the Father sent the beloved Son down across from me, that in itself declares I have value and worth. And I can now speak those things over me because he speaks them over. What does the psalmist says? How marvelous are your thoughts of me, O Lord. There are so many I can't count with the sand. But most of us won't listen to that voice of the God speaking over us. We listen to this dumb little voice in our head. I call it it. And we tear ourselves down. We judge and criticize everything. And we always live in that negativity.
And so is it possible to actually, I mean, I think you can here and there shut down the it voice and tell it to shut up and replace it with these positive affirmations as you know, in comparison to these negative inner voice that are critical. Is there a way to shut that down for good? Is there, or
no.
Are you still just going to have?
It's if the Bible refers to his flesh, it's a part of our humanity. It's okay. that we'll call it the fallen nature part of our human side, but it's that part of our humanness that's always going to be with you. It's that wounded part of our soul that always that needs love and attention and acceptance, but is always afraid of it. And so it always likes to be critical, judgmental. It wants to be right. The sin nature, call it whatever you want.
Yeah, because I mean, you don't want to be in inner turmoil in your own brain here in something telling me, this is, you're not good enough. You're never going to be good enough. And then I'm saying, oh, shut up, it. Shut up, it. I'm going to be good enough. I'm amazing. I'm wonderful. I feel wonderful. And then I'm in my head, like just living in my head with a turmoil.
Romans 7 is the battle you just described, where Paul says, the things I don't want to do, I do. The things I do want to do, I don't do.
Uh-huh.
And he says, oh, miserable man that I am. Who will deliver me from the body of this death? Paul talks about that struggle. Addicts know that struggle really well. The addict self and the real self, and they fight within each other. And we all have that struggle. I don't want to do this, but I do. I feel this, but I don't want to feel that. We all have that.
That's exhausting.
Until you recognize you don't have to obey that voice or even pay it attention. You can just let it say whatever it wants to say in the back of your head and you say, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for this.
And I'm not giving you honor anymore.
Next.
Yeah, exactly.
Because turn the page.
Because it goes back to what we talked about last week, that secure attachment.
Uh-huh.
When I can now believe that I'm good enough, I'm lovable, and the cross declares I am, so why not anchor those beliefs to the cross? Well, guess what? When it goes, you're not good enough, I go, shut up. Yes, I am. The cross says I am. By the way, Angelia thinks I am. Colby thinks I am. My wife thinks I am. My kids think I am. I must be.
Yeah.
And that's not arrogance. That's healthy pride.
Yeah.
You see?
All right. Well, moving on, we are going to have to take a quick break, and we've got some good stuff coming up. So stay tuned. You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick.
To have and to hold from this day forward. Your wedding day was the biggest commitment of your life. Relationships change over time. Needs go unmet. Communication breaks down. And half of all marriages end in divorce. If till death do us part has become a challenge, then it's time to reconcile and reconnect. In his 1 to 3 day marriage intensives, Dr. Rick Marks coaches couples in distress back to their love and hope for a future together. Dr. Rick's intensives is not traditional therapy. Marriage intensives give couples the skills for communication, problem solving, emotional regulation, as well as the skills for healthy bonding and much more. Intensives empower couples to create the marriage they desire with Dr. Rick's Relate Well principles and tools, keeping couples out of the divorce graveyard.
I realized many years ago with a team that I work with that if we can teach people those skills for bonding and reattachment and communication and problem solving and emotional regulation and much more, it gives you the hope again, which can lead to the goodness and the love and the feelings and the intimacy so that you win. Your usness, your marriage wins, and your kids win.
87% of the couples who participated in Dr. Rick's marriage intensives reconnected their love for each other and remained married.
If you want to take the opportunity, you have the will to do it, you want to do it, and you want to save it, we'll show you how.
Intensives are cheaper than a divorce and much more meaningful. Save your marriage. Reconnect your love. Save a generation and secure your future. For more information, visit drrickmarks.com or call 904-724-8683.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage, and we're talking today about it.
Yes.
That voice, that inner voice of negativity, that pattern of negative thoughts that just don't stop. And we go through ebbs and flows throughout our day. I mean, everyone's thinking something throughout the day. If you're not filling your thoughts with, you know, everything around kids and mm-hmm. everything that's happening in our world, then you have your inner voice that's talking to you. And sometimes it can talk to you at the same time when you are thinking of other things at the same time. But
yes.
But they have such negative impacts on us. And it actually impacts every aspect of our life, not only our own lives and our own thinking, but it impacts others, too, mm-hmm. around us.
This is why most people don't actually live successful relationships, is because they spend their life listening to that little voice in their head, then dealing with life, what I call in life. You know, you can live life in your head watching, judging it, like we talked about earlier in the earlier segment, in the stands, sitting back in the back of your head, just watching, judging. That's a very different way of living than to come outside of myself, be fully in the present, and deal with whatever's going on in the moment. It's a lot safer to be in my head watching, judging, criticizing. Why? Because then I can always be right, and she'll always be wrong.
Oh, isn't that
it's
interesting?
It's always about protecting my own ego. Because that's the thing about it. It's going to look good, and it's not going to look bad. Why? You can call it the ego, that part of you that says, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'll never be wrong. The problem is also where it gets us really into trouble is that there's another piece of this puzzle with this critical voice. When we go through life experiencing a lot of things that happen, I call them events. As we experience events, the brain is a meaning-making machine. It attaches meaning to everything, right? So something happens, and your brain has to make sense of it. So it creates what we call a story about the event. And the story is usually in the phrase of I or I'm. So like when I was born in Miami, 1961, I was living with my dad and my stepmom. They raised us. And my dad decided when I was about eighth grade that we're going to play baseball. My first year playing baseball, I had a perfect batting record. I never hit the ball, ever. But what no one knew is when I'd get up to bat, I would hear this voice back behind me there. My dad would say things like, you know, don't you mess this up. Be like the other boys. And I would strike out each time. That's just an event that took place in life and in time. But what my brain decided was, I'm not good enough. So you create a story to understand an event. But prior to the age of 13, and this is important for our listeners, you have kids right now under the age of 13, their brains think what's called egocentric. Something happens, they created it. They made it happen. All right? Abstract thinking kicks in around 13 beyond. So whenever you're doing something, the kids are forming stories about themselves. Some of these stories are things like, I'm not good enough. I'm unlovable. I'm broken, unfixable. I have no value. I'm unworthy, right? I'm ugly. There's just a bunch of them. So what happens is when you create a story, your brain makes a decision and holds that decision to be true, but now it's unconscious to you. What it does, it keeps looking into your future moment by moment by moment by things that are happening in the moment, and it goes, see, you're not good enough.
It's looking right. In the future?
Yeah, because we move, time happens this way. You live in a moment, right?
Yes.
So think about it this way. Time comes from the future into the present and goes immediately where? Right into
behind
the past.
Behind you.
Yeah, it goes right into the past. That's how time works. Time comes from the future into the present, right into the past. And that's how you live life. So life happens in time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So in life and time, on a particular day, hour, minute, second, millisecond, you were conceived. And out there in the future, on a particular day, hour, second, millisecond, you're going to die. Because everything happens in life and in time. What it does, since it only speaks from the past, what it does moment by moment by moment in life keeps reminding you that you're not good enough, that you're unlovable. See, they're the problem. You can't even do this. That's why they don't like you. And moment by moment by moment, as you walk life time in time into the future, you keep living your future as a part of your past. Moment by moment by moment by moment by moment.
So that's why history repeats itself.
Constantly. It's because you're living out those same patterns, and very much so. And you're living the thoughts into the future moment by moment by moment by moment.
So it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy because of it.
Yes. And your story. And no one ever challenges the story. No one ever challenges the story. Because what they don't know is they have a story at play moment by moment by moment into the future. And it constantly reminds you of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is you never question the story. You never question whether you're good enough or not. You never question whether you're lovable or not. You just assume you're not.
So you've got to break the pattern. I mean, it's just like you're, I don't know, playing a sport and you've missed the ball. You didn't catch the ball in the outfield and you've told yourself you're not good enough. You're never going to catch the ball. It's never going to happen. Everyone's going to laugh at you. It's never going to happen. And you're going to attach that to the future. So you don't want the ball to come. Don't make the ball come to me. Don't make it come to me because I'm going to drop it. I'm not going to get it. Everyone's going to laugh at me.
And
here we go.
More likely you're going to drop it because you keep telling yourself you are.
Right. So then you've just fulfilled that negative, self-fulfilling prophecy from your inner negative voice.
Yes.
Because of it.
And we
so
never...
if you don't tell yourself a different story or change the channel, I guess, for lack of a better word, change the channel.
This is why the cross of Christ is so important in terms of our faith. Because to recognize that the Creator, the Heavenly Father, sent his biological son, Jesus, down a cross. That one act, which is a true act of history, that one act in history declares that all of us have value, that we matter, that we're good enough, that we're not broken and fixable, that we have value. Why? Because you don't send things you love and cherish to die for something you hate. You die for things you value. The fact that Jesus died on the cross is proof that we have value. And what I learned in my own journey of transformation was every moment that I live life, moment by moment, even right here, I can live by the story that I told myself back there because of what my dad did. I'm not good enough. That was my brain telling me that. Or I can listen to what the cross says of me. And by the way, even if the cross didn't say it, my wife thinks I'm lovable. My kids do. I'm assuming you do. Kobe does. Well, then all these other people think I'm lovable. Well, maybe it's true then. And just because some people don't like me, that doesn't mean it's not lovable. It just means they don't like me. So what? So what? It's still true of me. And now I have to make a choice in the moment. Live by the story I've always told myself or by the one that has already been declared over me to be true regardless of what I tell myself. And that was the place I had to come to many, many years ago. And when I did, you're talking about secure attachments, right? I can really start building secure attachments because now I'm beginning to believe that I am lovable, that I am good enough, that I do matter, that I do have value. And when I started to be secure in that and telling the it voice to shut up, I'm not listening to you, and I quit paying attention to it. It's not that it doesn't speak anymore, Angelia. It's just that because I don't honor it anymore, I notice it back there saying something, but I just ignore it.
So is it about repetition of giving yourself new thoughts with good energy and good, I don't know, positive thoughts?
Personal development field would call it affirmations.
Okay.
Psalm 139, the psalmist says, "How marvelous are your thoughts of me, O Lord." Those are affirmations. Interesting, and this is one of my criticisms of the Western church. If you listen to pastors' messages today, you hear things like, you know, you're just a filthy, rotten, no good sinner. You're just this. You're just that. You know, Jesus died because you're this. That is not the truth. We're fearfully and wonderfully made. Just because I'm a sinner doesn't mean I'm rotten and wicked. You know, he didn't say, "How terrible are your thoughts of me, O Lord? How marvelous are your thoughts of me?" But we don't feel good about ourselves unless we beat ourselves up theologically. I'm like, but he thinks marvelous thoughts of you. Why can't you disagree with him then? He's declared it's true of you. Why don't you learn to live in it then?
I think maybe a good practice would be something that you would say to somebody else. Think of, I mean, you giving a compliment to someone versus you giving a negative response to someone. And you wouldn't give that negative response to someone. You wouldn't do that. So why do you do it to yourself?
It's what we do in the workplace. Think about it this way. You take a resume, you go for a job, and there's all these things, and you're trying to get a job based on all your strengths, right? And so the HR person's in and go, "Wow, Angela, you got everything we're looking for. You're hired." And they hire you because of these strengths. I find it interesting that after you start working for a while, all they do is point out all your negative things. I go, wait a minute. Yeah. What about the things you hired me for?
What about these other things?
Do those things exist?
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't motivate people by tearing them down. You motivate them by appreciations approvals. You speak words over them. And by the way, this is also another reason why these words we speak to ourselves are unhealthy. The power of life and death are in our words, the Jewish proverb says, right? So if you speak negative words over yourself, you will become those negative words. You're speaking death over yourself. Why not speak life over yourself? That's one of the things that you helped me with when we started talking about doing the radio. You really helped me because you were so positive about it. And I was like, oh, no, it was talking back in those early days. I
was
like,
it was talking.
It was. And I'm like, OK, I know what you're saying. But I'm like, it's like, OK, you're not going to be good at this. I'm like, oh, shut up, Rick.
Yes,
and
you
were so encouraging and affirming to me. I said, you know, I need to shut that it voice up and just listen to what God is telling me through Angelia, mm-hmm. that she knows how to help do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that was, it was playing itself out in those early days.
Yep. Shut it up.
Yeah.
Shut it up.
That's right.
Well, you know what? You've got a lot more information that is out there and it is all in one book. So share that with us because that book is on Amazon. It's on Relate Well. Tell everybody about your book.
It's my book, Relationships for Life, which is really 21 lectures I gave and recorded many years ago and was put in a book format where I just talk about my journey, everything I've learned about healthy relationships, not so much marriage, but healthy relationships. All the things in the book apply to marriage, but they apply to parenting. They apply anywhere, friend to friend, you know, and in the workplace. And so it was really written to help people have healthy relationships, learn the principles. You'll hear my journey along the way, how I learned these things the hard way. And hopefully it teaches skills and tools. And my hope is that encourages and inspires people to go replicate what they read.
I like that.
To go create it for themselves.
And it's on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. You can get it there or at drrickmarks.com.
Okay.
In the media section, you can find it there as well.
There you go. All right. Well, we will be back in a moment. You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick.
Dr. Richard Marks is a licensed professional counselor and clinical fellow with the AAMFT and an ordained minister. His education and training is exemplary. He holds a PhD in counseling psychology and a master's in marriage and family therapy, as well as religious education. Throughout his life, Dr. Rick has taught graduate school, managed psychiatric hospitals, held private practice, and is a U.S. Navy veteran. He has served as commissioner on the Florida Commission on Healthy Marriage, as well as started the statewide Healthy Family Initiative in Kansas under Governor Brownback. He is an author and founder of the Relate Well Relationship Skills Program. As the founder of Relate Well, Dr. Marks provides singles, premarital, and married couples the tools they need to lead a healthy, mature relationship.
And we teach skills for attachment. We teach skills for bonding. We teach skills for confiding, for communication, problem solving. We'll even teach you how to regulate emotional energy so you can be angry instead of not.
In addition, he trains in corporations and organizations the essentials of emotionally healthy leadership. He's been featured as a guest on numerous TV stations and radio shows in Jacksonville. Dr. Marks resides in Jacksonville with his wife Luella, who have been married since 1984, and they have three adult children. If Dr. Marks can serve your organization, business, church, or if you're seeking help through counseling and coaching, visit drrickmarks.com or relatewell.us or call 904-724-8683.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage, and we're talking about a lot of stuff today, but we've definitely just tackled the it voice in our head and what negative thoughts that it can bring and negative emotions. And it just brings the whole ick factor really into our lives, our thoughts, and our relationships that surround us. So we've got to put that it in its place and put it aside and replace those, or at least soothe those with affirmations that are positive.
Yes. The power of life and death are in our words. And you speak negative words over you speak positive words over you.
Mm-hmm.
And why not choose to speak wonderful thoughts over yourself, since the psalmist is clear, he thinks those over me anyways.
Yes, absolutely. And I like what you said during the break. You were talking about the past.
Created futures. Yeah, past created futures.
Yeah, so if you keep creating that it voice over and over of that past.
Moment by moment into your future, you keep living out the same thing.
Yeah, And you don't want that. You want something new and better and improved.
Exactly.
So if we put that it voice in its place. All right. Well, now I want to talk about something that I think is pretty important. It's about, there was an article written by Kyle Benson, and it talks about the unsolvable versus the solvable problems in relationships. Because let's face it, some things are not solvable and some things are. And
yes.
They get put into different categories, and that can create major conflict. It can create divorce.
Yes. He is writing from the research of Dr. John Gottman, which we make reference to here periodically. Mm-hmm. Gottman's research is the most brilliant research on marriage. Mm-hmm. And Gottman identified in his research over these 20-something years that he calls them perpetual problems, that 68% of problems in a marriage have no solution.
50%?
68% of problems in marriage have no solution. They're just perpetual. Perpetual problems are, they stem from differences in culture, differences in ideology, differences in thinking, just differences in opinions, you know, belief systems, differences in religion.
Yeah, we're not the same people.
Mm-mm. And you know, my oldest son is married to a phenomenal young lady. She's Egyptian. Well, there's differences in culture. And you're not going to agree. You see, what Gottman's research shows is healthy, mature couples don't allow these unsolvable, or what Gottman calls perpetual problems, to destroy the relationship. They'll protect, in our language and relate well, they'll protect us from unsolved problems. Example, one of our perpetual problems in my marriage is dog. I want one really, really bad. She does not want one really bad. We will never agree to that issue, you see? But we have to negotiate around that thing so that it doesn't destroy the relationship. You see what I mean? Because there's not a solution to it. We're just different that way, all right? Mm-hmm. We're different in a lot of ways. And so and what Kyle did here, he did point out, so what are some examples of perpetual relationship conflict? He says things like punctuality, where one person's really late.
That's
another
so
person's really
important.
On time.
Yes.
You know, Luella realized when we first got married that if somebody said we're going to be there, we got to be somewhere at 1, we were there at 12:45. And I was always pushing, we're going to be late. She goes, we're not there to 1. No, we can be there at 12:45. Why? Well, because you're always there 15 minutes early. That's why.
Or you're late.
Yeah, or you're late. You know, you're there ahead of time.
That's the military in you.
You knew.
For sure.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If duty starts at 0400, you're there at 0345. Exactly right. Ready to go. Exactly right. Difference in the finances. In differences in whether one person's introvert or extrovert. You know, socialness, when he points out. Differences in cleanliness and organization. Those are just differences, you know. Time together, you know, whether you have closeness with your extended family or not. He talks about differences in parenting style. I tend to be a lot more grace-oriented. Luella tended to be a lot more harsher.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
She's the harsh one.
She was the harsh one.
Okay.
You see, we are just different that way. But we had to find ways to work together so that we wouldn't be in conflict around those things. So that's where communication came in. But I found out, example and differences. I'm the kind of person that I'll let something slide. You know what I mean? I like it, I'll let it slide. Luella goes, no, we're going to speak up about it. So those are differences. They've created problems for us, but they've also benefited me. Here's how. If I order a steak somewhere and I like them well done, and it comes out medium, I will tend to go, oh, well, I'll just eat it because I don't want to create conflict. Luella goes, no, we're paying for it. So what I usually do now, I go, oh, it's medium. She goes, we'll tell them. I go, great, I'll let you.
So she takes the role.
And so she'll, because she's more assertive that way. I tend to be more, you know, just go with the flow. And she's like, no, we're paying for this. We'll tell them.
Yeah,
you want it. And what I've learned is that trait of hers that I see as conflictual actually has a positive side to it, right?
Yeah.
Same time, though, she may say to me, hey, this has happened. How would you handle this? Because I'm more the tender, nurturing, compassionate one. I go, I would do this and I would say this. She goes, ah, never thought of that. So we actually can benefit from each other's differences, see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that, but we're going to be different in a lot of areas. Perpetual problems are just unsolvable. Masterful couples don't let unsolved problems destroy the relationship. Here's what most couples do today. Well, here's what Westerners do. Westerners don't value relationship. We value agreement. So though we may be different, what we're really doing is I'm forcing you to agree with me, or you're going to force me to agree with you. We don't agree. We'll never agree about dog. But when you force agreement, you're going to destroy the relationship. Relationships are not built on agreement. Agreement can kill a relationship. Relationships are built around understanding.
So don't fight to win. Fight to
understand.
Understand one another.
And when you put, we say this way in our world, when two perspectives come together, that creates understanding. That understanding that's created by putting perspectives together creates the relationship, not agreement. So we can understand each other's perspectives about dog, and that creates a relationship. Just don't ask me if I agree with her, because I don't.
No.
You see what I mean? And this is what happens in these relationships, where when that happens and you try and force it, these are signs that he points out from Gottman, that you start to feel rejected by your partner. You keep attempting to talk about the issues so you can make headway. You become entrenched in your position, and you kind of force your view. You just a subject until you end up feeling more and more frustrated, right? Next thing you know, your conversations don't have humor, or they're not fun anymore. There's no playfulness to it. It's all about winning now. It's about arguing. All right. This is the really tough part. The more you keep fighting about these perpetual issues, they're unsolvable, you'll start to tear down, vilify, negate, invalidate, tear down your partner. Why? Because now you're in a position of, you're in that power struggle stage we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You're in that stage where I'm going to win this fight, and you're going to lose, and I'm going to win. I'm right. You are wrong. And the reality is, they're just differences in perspective. That's all it is. It's an unsolvable issue. But you want an unsolvable issue to have a solution. You won't. It's just unsolvable.
Okay.
And what Gottman's research shows, what he calls masterful couples, that masterful couples value the relationship. We call it us in our world. They value us enough to find a solution if possible. But what they do, and this is the key to Gottman's thinking, whenever you get into that power struggle, he calls that you're gridlocked. Once you're gridlocked, you are no longer working together. You're working to win. You have, and a gridlocked issue has a lot of emotional energy around it, right? You have to get out of gridlock.
And how do you get out of gridlock? I mean, once you're, nose to nose, and you've dug in the sand, I've dug in the sand, I'm adamant about whatever it is, about something, and you're adamant about it, and we're not working for us. We're working for you to understand my point of view, and me to understand your point of view, and for somebody to change their mind, because no one's going to move on this issue. So we are in gridlock.
And that's gridlock. Yes.
How do you get out of that?
First thing is, you're going to have to start valuing the relationship and not winning. That means you're going to start collaborating together. You got to move to compassion. Start listening to each other's perspectives to understand the other person's perspective, rather than force them to understand yours. And once you get to understanding, that creates compassion. And then once you move to compassion and find understanding, and you have a relationship now, we're no longer gridlock. We're in compassion. We're in empathy, right? Goodwill, respect, the four protectors, right? Requires stability.
Do both people have to be in that compassion mode, or
very
one
much,
person?
Very much so.
Okay, so both people have to move to compassion. So I have to say, you know what? I understand where you're coming from. I know you think blah, blah. And then you have to say the same.
Yes. And then we can go, wow. Well, let's see if there is a solution to this. And like in Relate Well, we have a worksheet that helps people collaborate. We call it Heartful Collaboration, finding a solution for us. We actually have a worksheet that helps you do that. But you may find out, you know what? There really isn't a solution here. We're just that different.
Okay.
And then you get to make the decision. Do you want to keep fighting to win, or do you want to agree to disagree?
That's hard. That's hard to agree to disagree and walk away.
I used to think it was, but it's I found out it isn't anymore. When the value becomes on the relationship, not on being right or winning the argument. When the value shifts to us, like you want to us, like I'll tell you what brought me into resolution around the dog issue. With 2012, we had another real issue around it because I wanted one. I put one off for 28 years. Now is my time. And we got into a little spat about it. And I called my brother and just vented to him. And then he very lovingly empathized with me. Said, I want you to know, I'm really sad that she doesn't see how much this is important to you. And I said, thank you. That affirmation of my feelings calmed me down. Mm-hmm. And then he said, could I ask a question? I said, yeah. He goes, would you rather have a dog or would you rather have us? I'd rather have us.
Yeah.
And I made the decision not to get the dog because as I thought more about it, I realized I'm traveling at that time 42 weeks out of the year speaking. Mm-hmm. I'm not home much.
Yeah.
You know, I live by the four protectors. It would be disrespectful of me to ask her to take care of something that she doesn't want to take care of when I'm not home most of the time.
Yeah.
So I decided not to get the dog.
And I like that Gottman actually was talking about in the when you're in the gridlock stage to also become very clear, crystal clear on what the actual issue is. Because
yes.
The issue with you with a dog may be that your dad never let you have a dog. And so your whole goal in life was to have a dog just to prove him wrong. You could take care of a dog. And, you know, I'm not saying that that right. is the issue, but I'm saying that there is usually an underlying issue to the issue that you're being so passionate about.
And you have to deal with that issue at that level.
Right.
And we say in our world, that usually goes back to one of those needs, the cares needs, right? The relational needs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when you deal with it at that level, so you're working at it at the compassionate level. It's not about the dog. It's about me just feeling respected about and value that you do know what I want a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it was.
And maybe it's an issue that cuts really deep like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the issue is, it could be something that just cuts so deep. That's why you just are so passionate yeah. about, I've got to show you why I want XYZ.
Mm-hmm. And it can be differences in parenting, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to deal with it and get create real clarity around what is the problem and then deal with that issue.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. And if you would like to learn to lead a life through the four protectors in all of your relationships and to learn how to develop the tools that create us in your marriage, us in the family, or even us in the workplace, then register for the online Relate Well core program. You can register for Relate Well as a single or couple and just register online today at relatewell.us. And if you're looking for private relationship counseling with Dr. Rick himself, then call 904-724-8683. That's 904-724-8683. Well, this has been another informative show from Dr. Rick and Relate Well to help you live your best life. And remember, until next week, relate well to live well.
We want to invite you to visit relatewell.us. Whether you're single or a couple, come learn what a healthy relationship looks like and then put it into practice. For relationship counseling, contact Dr. Rick at relatewell.us.